Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to end the stigma of failure in an industry designed for you to fail.
All right. So this is an extra special episode for me because this is the first time I'm doing two things. It's the first time that I'm going to be talking about a service-based MLM. Most of the things I talk about are product-based, but this is a service-based MLM. And it's the first time that I am talking to a man who is in MLM, who, oddly enough, men are the minority in this industry. So this is really interesting, and I cannot wait to talk to this amazing person who we've been friends for a long time. He's followed me for a long time, and I value his input and his the way that he approaches things and his comments, and he's great. And so I just wanted to introduce my friend, Russ Nielsen.
How you doing?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
I'm super happy to have you. I like I said, men are the minority in multi-level marketing. I was doing some statistical research before we started talking, and honestly, it's about 26% of men. But what I saw in these studies that I was looking at is it's just slowly, incrementally increasing by like, just like minute percentages, but it started in like the 24% back in like early 2000s. And now it's almost closer to 27%. So it is growing. More men are coming into this industry. And so I'm really excited to hear your perspective, how you got into this industry, what the perspective of the services and how predatory they are in a completely different way. And I'm just really excited to, maybe we have some male listeners that listen and go, oh my God, I'm in a service-based pyramid scheme. Oh my God. So I think your voice is really valuable. So as always, please tell me where you were when multi-level marketing came into your life, what was going on, and how they got you.
Yeah, so I was working as a civilian contractor on Buckley Air Force Base in July 2006. I was with the company for 4 years. We were dealing with uniforms, BDUs, that kind of stuff. And it was a very intense environment. You were expected to know what you needed to do when you walked in there. They didn't want to babysit you. They didn't want to have to tell you what to do. You should not have to be told what's expected. So you go in there, you work, you do your job, and you go home. We went in at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we didn't leave until maybe about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's an early day.
Yeah. And I was sleep deprived. I was aging rapidly. The stress of the environment was increasing because a lot of our servicemen and women at that time were in Iraq, and things during that time were not going very well.
Right.
So there was a lot of anger, right, and a lot of frustration, a lot of tension, and it was killing me. Mm-hmm. Also, there was a lot of bureaucracy that just increased the frustration, and I was looking for a way out. So I'm at Sunday morning services, and I see a guy I met at a previous event, maybe a couple of months earlier. And I recognize him. I go up to him, I say hello, and we have, you know, a little conversation. I pull out my phone because I see a text pulls up, and he says, oh, by the way, how much are you paying every month for that phone service?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like when you're walking through Costco and they're like, let's just talk to me really quick. And I'm like, no. What?
Yeah.
Like you're answering your phone, and he's like, real quick, let me just ask you about your comparable rates on your phone rates. Like what's going on there?
Yeah.
What a weird question.
Exactly. Okay, so I was a bit taken aback by it. And I look at and I say, well, I'm paying $45 for unlimited services. Why? He says, well, How would you like to pay 20 for that? And I raise my eyebrows. I'm like, well, who wouldn't? This is expensive.
Right. Says, right. Who wouldn't want to cut your bill in half?
Right.
I mean, these are, and that's a lot of things. Like, these are a lot of questions like people in these industries ask you, like very like basic, like, wouldn't you want to make more money? Wouldn't you want to be happier? Wouldn't you want to live in a bigger house? Who would say no to any of those very basic questions? Like, yes, of course I want to make more money. Yes, of course I would like to save half of my bill. They really ask some of the most ridiculous, like, I mean, they're literally designed. These questions are designed to get you to engage in conversation and be open to this pitch, ultimately.
Yeah. So he invites me over to his apartment clubhouse, which I think at that time, because it was a public space, I felt a lot better. I would not have gone to his apartment directly because right. I didn't know him very well.
Oh, yes. Right. That's okay. That's another good point. Never follow a stranger to a second location. Like go to a public place, and stay there.
Yep. So he talks to me about this service called ACN, which stands for American Communications Network. And it's supposed to be the alternative to phone services. It's phone services that cuts your phone bill in half because it's not part of the big networks because they don't advertise. That's what makes them affordable.
So they're okay. Not spending money, all that money on advertising, so they don't have to add it into their service price.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm looking at him like,
you're okay. Like, that makes sense. Okay. I'm listening.
Yeah. Yeah. So
another before, surface answer or another so surface. He, yeah. Yeah.
Continue. Yeah. So he pulls out a couple of propaganda videos. Mm-hmm. And one of the propaganda videos talks about the actual service itself and how it saves money. And one of the services they had was called VoIP, which stands for Voice Over Internet Protocol.
Okay.
It's kind of like Skype on your own little computer, but like the computer setup that showed looked like something you see from Star Trek. Okay.
So what's the benefit of using this service over just using Skype, which is free?
Well, at the time, Skype was fairly new.
Okay. All right. Right. This is 2006. That's right.
Yes.
So we're going back like 15 years here.
Wow. Exactly.
Oh my God. 15 years. Makes me feel old. Anyway. So 15 years ago. Okay. 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 I'm back now. I'm back to where we were. I'm sorry. Continue. 15 years ago.
So I look at that and I say, well, that's pretty interesting. Okay. So I'm just nodding my head, you know, being, you know, taking all the information in. Yes. And afterwards, you know, he kind of looks at me and I'm like, wow, that's very interesting. So he puts in another propaganda video. And these were people that were like at the top of the right. business. Okay.
So he opens up the opportunity to go, look at this cool thing that I'm offering you. And then the next yeah. video is, and here's the proof of how it works.
Yeah. So a lot of these people who were at the top, they would tell sob stories. They would say, I was broke. I was down on my luck. I lost my job. I had no money.
Living in a van down by the river.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much. And then say, like, a very good friend introduced me to the ACN opportunity. And at first I was skeptical. I asked some questions. But I decided to just go full throttle, give it a shot. And I worked really hard. I didn't make money overnight, but over a period of time, I worked, I grew my business. Now I own a big house with a white picket fence. I have a nice, very attractive spouse.
And a jet ski in the garage.
Yep. Right. It's like, I'm living the life I've always dreamed of. I can be there for my kids. I can attend their sports games.
Mm-hmm. I can work on my phone in between the moments I want to cherish.
Yes. Pretty much.
Right. You know, you work part-time because you're working 15 minutes here and then 3 minutes there and then get an hour over here because you have the freedom to be your own boss. So you can go watch your kids do your things and go to your vacations and never have to ask for time off because you make your
own.
I mean, it's a utopian, beautiful promise. Again, who wouldn't want that?
Well, at the time, I was interested. I was 24 years old. I was naive and I was a little frustrated at my job and was looking for a way out. So this piqued my interest.
Right. So that was your vulnerability. You were working at the base. You were overworked. You were working crazy early hours, which, I mean, nobody that works that crazy early hours gets home at one and decides, well, I'm going to go to bed now, have a sensible meal and go to bed. No, you stay up. And you and you don't get any sleep and you're still going to bed at midnight and you're still waking up at four and you're like, I'll just have another shot of energy and get through the day. So you're like in that, like that, what they, you know, they call it the rat race, and you're in that and you're feeling that. And not every job is like that. I mean, there are crappy jobs out there. I've had a lot of them, but not every job is crappy, you know, but that's what they do. They the J-O-B, the just over broke, the 9 to 5, the corporate pyramid. Don't you want to be at the top?
Yeah.
And it's so funny because the predatory things, I mean, it is still very the same predatory, but with the women in MLM, it's like, don't you want to be the best mom you can be? And with the men, it's like, don't you want to create a future that will provide for the family you may have one day? So it literally is that same American dream societal pressure to have it all and be it all and do it all with very little work at all. Very easy. Yep. You're just going to do a lot of work now and then it's just going to residual forever. And then you won't have to do any work then, which again is not true.
Yeah.
That's interesting. The different predatory tactics, seeing like the male and the that side, what they say to the men. That's incredible.
Well, here's what he does. Okay. Now that video has piqued my interest, the first thing he does is he calls his ex-girlfriend, who happens to be his upline. Apparently they were still pretty tight.
Because the cult is tighter than any actual relationship. So they broke up, but they're still both so loyal to the cult that they're like, even though we're exes, which is like, who wants to work with their ex?
Yeah.
The cult has more power over them that they're like, this is fine. Everything's okay. This is great.
Yeah. His ex-girlfriend happens to be in Utah. Okay. Which is, you know, Morgantown.
Right.
Okay.
Lots of MLMs there in Utah.
Yeah. And ACN is huge there. ACN is huge. So he calls her up and he introduces me to her, and you know, she's, you know, very bubbly and friendly, and by the way, also happens to be physically attractive.
Of course.
So
it's easier that way, right?
Right. Okay. So, you know, she asked me a lot of the questions, and So I was interested, and I wanted to see what went on. And so she went to, the first thing she did was she let me know about the initiation fee, which was $499.
Right. Which,
what?
I mean, that's, here's another thing that a lot of people don't know. A telltale red flag for the FTC for pyramid schemes is anything that requires $500 or more to join. So MLMs skirt under this rule with a loophole where they just say it's $499. It's still $500. Everybody knows that $499 is $500, but that is a way that MLMs can appear to be legitimate and can get away from that pyramid scheme thing. Sorry, continue.
Yeah.
Just wanted to let everybody know that really quick.
So when I heard that, I was like, whoa, I don't have $499. That is too expensive.
Right. And to start your own cell phone company.
Yeah. I was like, I don't have $499. Where am I going to get that? So She's like, hang on. Before you make a decision, let me explain to you just how this works. So, all right, I listen. And she explains the ranks. The very bottom of the row is team trainer. You sign your, the first thing you need to do is sign yourself up for the services, which at that time, they didn't have cell phones, they had landlines, okay? The cell phones were released the year after I already left. So they had landlines. Well, I had no use for a landline. I had a cell phone.
Right.
So I'm just nodding my head and thinking, okay, continue. So you have to sign yourself up first as your own customer, and then you have to sign up three other people. And each person you sign up, you get like customer points. And if you do that, you already get like 7 customer points. And that puts you in a level called executive team trainer. And once you get there, you get $750.
As a bonus?
No, that's how much they pay you just for signing people up within a certain amount of time, which is usually a month. They give you a month to do that.
Okay. And you get this like, I guess it would be like fast recruit or fast sign up bonus type thing. If you don't hit that number, you don't get that money.
Then it takes you a lot longer to sign people up because they just push the goalposts back to where it's nearly impossible, which is where I was later on.
Right.
But then she explains the levels of, okay, after you sign those people up, you have to sign a couple of reps underneath you. And once you sign reps,
recruiting mandate.
Yep. He's like, once you sign up those reps and get them to sign people up, and you have to like sign like 5 people up, get them to sign 5 people up.
Right. There it is.
And
right.
So on and so forth.
And again, I talk about this all the time, the 5 to 5, like, and Robert Fitzpatrick talks about it too. The notion of just getting 5 people to sign up 5 more people after 13 successful levels, you run out of humans on earth. And that's including the elderly and babies.
Yeah.
It's mathematically impossible what they teach you.
Yeah, it is.
But nobody goes, wait a second. Everyone goes, oh, that's super easy. I know 5 people.
Yeah. Everybody says that in the beginning, right?
Oh my God. I know like 100 people, 5 people. Like, that's easy. That's only 5% of the people I know. I can do that.
Yeah. So she talks about the levels, executive team leader, team coordinator. And then you get to then after you have surpassed those levels, you get to regional vice president. And the highest level you can get to is senior vice president.
That's just like the office, like assistant to the regional manager.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's so, like all of these ridiculous and they're in the product-based ones too. Yours and the service-based ones are much more businessy, like regional manager, executive manager. Oh, it's just, it's really interesting to me to see the different ways. It's the same guilt, but it just is wearing a different costume. And the same guilt and the same everything. And oh yes, the levels, that's what I was talking about. The levels in the product-based ones are like mentor, coach, you know, they're more like empowering. Whereas the ones in the service-based are more like, I'm the manager, like more power. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'm saying it the right way.
Yeah, but
it's very much, again, like it is very gender-based. Like we are targeting this and that is what we are going to do. And we're going to do all the societal peer pressures that these people feel. And then we're going to give them the titles that are going to make them feel really good too. And the titles are inconsequential. They mean nothing. They're just recruiting ranks. You could literally be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But those aren't flashy. And those aren't something you can put in a Facebook bio. I'm a level 1 at something, something. It's like, I'm an executive regional manager and it seems legit. And I would take advice from the executive regional manager. If he's telling me he has a great business opportunity or someone who's a mentor or someone who's a coach, those are
fake titles that give them an air of confidence and expertise that they don't actually have.
No, and in reality, you're just an independent contractor.
Right. You're just a 1099 employee, basically, that has no benefits, no recourse for anything. And the contracts that you sign basically sign away any normal rights a 1099 contractor would have. So you're not even really that.
No. So they promote entrepreneurship, the opportunity to own your own business.
Right. Okay, isn't that what everybody wants? That's the American dream.
Oh, right.
Again, it's the American dream.
Yeah. So I'm kind of in a dilemma because I don't have $499. There's no way I could possibly get that with the expenses that I had at that time.
Right. That's a lot of money for a 24-year-old.
Yeah.
I remember being 24, and if someone was like, oh, it's like $500, I'd be like, ooh, can I think about it for like another week or so?
Yeah.
Like that's like a lot.
Yeah. Well, here's where things get a little strange. Time goes by. My future upline, he does some digging on the internet and he finds that ACN is partnering with a now defunct payday loan company called PEO Cash. Oh. Now ACN will deny that.
Of course they will.
But this is now ACN partners with this payday loan company called PEO Cash. They will loan you the $500, which you can pay back in installments. Okay, keep in mind, they add interest to that too.
Right. And at the same time, they're also promoting financial freedom while encouraging you to go into debt to chase this literally impossible dream.
Yeah. So
this is not the first time that we've heard of this on this show, but it's nice to see it again. So we know that it's not just a coincidence and it's actually a pattern.
Yeah. So at that time, I really had to make a decision. I did not feel good about getting myself into debt, but at the same time, I asked myself, do I really want to be stuck at this job the rest of my life?
The one angel on your shoulder is like, that's a lot of money. And we're trying to get out of debt. And the other one's like, but this money will allow us to become millionaires pretty quickly. So.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I was so naive. I ended up listening to the devil on my shoulder.
Right. And yeah. I think most of us listening to the show, and most of us on this show also listened to the devil on the shoulder. So don't feel guilty or don't beat yourself up too much about that.
Good. Okay.
I'm giving you the permission to forgive yourself.
It's been so long. I've
since. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Not everybody's there. I hope you would be at this point. And I feel that you are, but not everybody's there yet.
So I get this loan. I might as well just put a millstone around my neck at this point.
Right. That ball and chain on both ankles.
Yep. So I get this loan for $500. I pay the $499 initiation fee, and my upline calls his ex-girlfriend. She's like, yay,
so happy for you. Welcome to the family.
Yeah. So, because we're in Colorado and she's in Utah, we kind of have to find other people doing ACN in Colorado, which is a very small minority. It's not very popular here.
I have real quick about you onboarding or joining or whatever it's called in ACN. At that point, when you made that payment and you got that loan and you made that payment and you signed those papers and you became, how did you feel?
Internally, I'm asking myself, what the heck am I getting myself into?
Right. That little angel still under the other angels on your shoulder going, hey, and you can kind of hear him, but the devil ate him. So you can't really hear him very well. He's screaming from inside the belly.
So you're like, something. Did you have any like excitement? Like, ooh, my life's about to change, or ooh, I just started this business. Like, there's so much potential. I have so much potential, and I'm so empowered. Did you feel those feelings?
I was ready to get going at that time. So
like, just like ready to just pull the trigger and let's go. Let's like, just start the race.
Yep. I was ready for that.
Bust through the starting line.
Yeah.
So there was so that energy and stuff. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So we find a group in Thornton, Colorado, which was about maybe 20 minutes away from where I was living at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my upline gets a hold of a young lady from California who was running two food businesses, and she was at the rank of team coordinator. Okay. So he gets a hold of her, explains that he signed up a new rep, would like to come over, and they'd like to come over. And whenever she does, they do what they, whenever they get together and have presentations, they have what's called PBRs. Now that stands for private business reception, but to the average person, they think alcoholic beverage.
Right. Well, because so like another person I talked to recently mentioned that term PBR. And I was like, I'd never. So, okay. So it's, and that was a product-based MLM. So yeah. they didn't call it that in mind, but that is a common term, a PBR. And what was that? A
private business reception.
A private business reception or a rah-rah recruitment luncheon.
Yep. So we go to Thornton, we go to her house, and she's like this young 28-year-old team coordinator, very, very outgoing, very expressive. She also happens to be very militant in how she runs her team. I mean, okay. she they talk about boss babe. Well, this is like the queen bee.
Right.
And that's why I gave her the nickname TCGI Jane, because she was, you will do this and you will do this right. And I don't want to have to come and tell. Yeah, that.
Did she just like watch Wall Street too many times or something? Like, what is with this like bullpen attitude?
Yeah.
That's really strange. But again, like it goes into that regional manager kind of like, I'm the boss of you all, even though we're all independent business owners. So I'm not like, double speak, MLM double speak. Great. Fantastic.
So your
boot camp instructor.
Yeah. So she invites me, she actually puts me on the spot, invites me to come up where she's standing because everyone else is just kind of sitting around on couches and chairs. And so I get up, I walk up to where she's standing, and she asked me to introduce myself, like what I do for a living, what made me want to join. And I pretty much just said the exact same thing I told you. And she puts her arm around me and she says, you made the right decision. Today, your life is going to change for the better. That's the kiss of death.
Right.
Okay. Because she was, she's very straightforward. She's no nonsense. She's, she thinks that by empowering people, she's got to crack the whip.
Right. Like tough love.
And engage in tough love.
Yeah.
And
which I don't think's ever worked in my experience for me personally, because I'm not if you're tough with me, like I'll just cry.
Yeah.
I'm just not. I'm like, tough love doesn't work on me. Okay. Like it just doesn't work on everybody. And that's so toxic, because again, like you join this company because you have $500, not because you're qualified, not because you have any sort of skills or know anything about the company. Anybody can join. Anybody with $500 can join. You don't need any qualifications, any education, any diplomas, any certifications, nothing.
Nope.
And so these people don't know how to train other people, and they watch Wall Street and go, that looks right.
Yep.
Tough love works, but it's toxic, and it creates a lot of mental health issues and PTSD and anxiety and stress that's unnecessary.
Well, get this, right? So she has everybody repeat, you know, they chant this in unison. This is how you're supposed to get people to sign up underneath you as customers, not necessarily representatives. The chant is, can you do me a huge favor?
No.
Yes, that's it.
No.
And then you're supposed to tell them that you're starting your own business, mm-hmm. that you're strapped for cash, you know, need a little help. This is kind of what you're doing. And then you're supposed to say, can you help my business by giving it a try? That is pure manipulation. And it is a great way to lose friendships and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way we're taught to do it, mm-hmm. because she says that, you know, people are always willing to help you out. That's why they're your friends, your family, because they know you've done things for them in the past. They're willing to do things for you too.
Right. Very deceptive, right? Very deceptive. Exactly. Incredibly deceptive.
Yeah. So, so we practice that, and then we're advised to develop what's called a warm market list, where we write names of everyone we know. And then we're supposed to look up the scripts on the website, print them off.
The scripts are right on the website.
Oh yeah, we have scripts.
Like in your back office, you log into your back office and you like click scripts and it's like all the scripts.
Yep. So
I love hearing about the scripts.
Yeah. So the scripts, she tells you about when you're doing the presentation, that she tells you about the different people you're going to be associating with. And they call them apples. Wow. Red apples, green apples, and rotten apples.
Which one am I, Russ? Which kind of apple am I?
I'd say you're between green and rotten. In a sense, like you're green because the green apples always ask questions.
Right.
That's what they're gonna do. They're very indecisive. They want to make sure that they know what they're getting into. So they're gonna ask you a lot of questions. Rotten apples, they're not interested at all. Red apples, which is what I was, they're like, heck yeah, I want to do this.
I was a red apple for a long time. Now I'm definitely a green apple. Well, and if you ask any MLM, I'm a rotten apple.
Yes.
I'm a suppressive person. I'm a hater. I'm a failure. I'm bitter. I'm all these things.
It's well, I'm great. In that category too. So,
I know. Isn't it like the best club ever? The Bitter Boss Babe Club. Maybe I should make shirts that say Bitter Boss Babe. Like, mm-hmm. Who would buy a Bitter Boss Babe shirt?
Right?
Oh man, I really should just have like a line of snarky anti-MLM shirts where it looks like we're kind of pro and then people read it and they're like, oh, they're making fun of it. Oh, they're definitely against the business. Okay. New project.
So
let's throw another thing on top of all the things I'm doing. Why not? All right. I'm sorry.
So I write the names. I write the names down.
Write all your warm market. Oh, I have one more question about this, writing these things down. Because I had to do that too. That was something that we did in our Inspire tours, which is the same thing that you're doing. We just had a different name. Inspire. You say it's so inspiring. And we had like, you know, set a timer for 5 or 10 minutes and write down as many names as you possibly could. But they also said, if you don't know their name, just write down like what you know them from. So it would be like Starbucks barista, checker at the grocery store. And these were also people in your warm market, even though you didn't know their names.
Right.
But you could approach them because they were people in your daily life that you see all the time. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not writing my Starbucks barista on this list. Like that is really weird. So were you encouraged to do that as well? Or was it really only specific names you knew?
Anyone you knew.
So you could write Starbucks barista if you wanted.
Yeah.
Cute girl at the post office. Like
yes. Yes. Anyone you knew and had some form of relationship, you just wrote it down.
Guy that walks his dog past my house every morning.
Yep. Like,
Hey, can I ask you how much you pay for your cellular plan?
Right.
All right. Okay. I'm getting the vibe now. Okay. So you write these names down and then what?
So at that point you call each and every one of them up. Okay. And you
on the phone.
On the phone. You ask them if they can do you that favor. And
okay. And these are people you know.
These are people
you know. So when your friend calls you and says, hey, can you do me a favor? On the phone, and not in a text where you can look at it and go, what's the favor? You're on this face-to-face, like, or, you know, voice-to-voice on the phone. Your friends can't be like, I have croissants in the oven, I have to go. Like, they're like stuck on the phone with you and they love you and they care about you and they know you're in a scam and they're like, oh my God, I guess.
That's not what happened with me.
That's not what happened with you. Okay. Tell me.
No.
Tell me. No. I want to know. Tell me.
So I do exactly what I'm told to do. And my friends, they got common sense. Okay. They know better. So they stop me right in the middle and they say, Russ, what are you doing?
Selling cellular plans.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm just trying to get my business. Like, no. You're not starting your business or anything. You're in a pyramid scheme. Okay. You're trying to sell this crap to me that I don't want and don't need. And if you ever wanted to remain my friend, you don't sell this crap to me ever again. You understand?
You have some really aggressively good friends.
Yeah.
I had people in my life that told me that too. And I was like, pyramid schemes are illegal. What do you mean? So.
Yeah.
Again, and I cry when people are aggressive. So maybe that's why that didn't work for me.
Well, at the time, I got to be honest with you, I was crushed. I was like, holy crap.
Right, because we don't even think about that side. Because you're a victim in this, right? And these people are saying you're a victim and you're like, oh my God, I spent this money. I put so much faith and energy and time and your friends are like, absolutely not. And you say you're crushed.
Yeah, I'm crushed. I'm not only taken by surprise, I'm crushed, I'm sad. I kind of go into a little depression because this is the first time I've ever had them talk to me that way. And right. I'm thinking, wow, what did I do wrong?
Like a big slap across the face. And you're like, what did I do to deserve that?
Yeah. And so my upline's like, hey, you know what? Rejection happens in this business. Okay. Mm-hmm. It happens. Okay. But I'm going to tell you, this is going to help you grow. Now, when they say that, okay, when you're in the business, you're thinking, okay, I understand, I get it. When you're out, you're like, yeah, grow into a very insecure person, unsure of themselves, low self-esteem, depressed.
Already feeling vulnerable in that because of the job that you just left. And now you're in an even more toxic situation where your friends aren't even supportive.
Mm-hmm. So I'm crushed. It's like, you know, maybe I just made a mistake doing now I'm $500 in the hole. Now what am I going to do? So what does he do in this situation? Calls his ex-girlfriend up, tells her exactly what happened.
She's got a script for it too. Like she knows exactly what to say.
She's like, hey, listen to me. This happens in the business. It happened to me too.
Relating.
So, yeah.
To make it seem legitimate. Great. Right.
Yep. So she says, hey, look, an RVP is going to be speaking here in Utah. You know, this day he's scheduled to speak this day at this time, this building.
And what is that? What does that mean?
RVP is regional vice president.
Ooh, the regional vice president was coming.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So she invites me to come over and see him speak, you know, get some of that self-esteem back, that confidence that I just lost.
Right. This is going to really invigorate you and really, really energize and charge your business. You're going to get so much from this.
Yeah.
Right.
So I look at my upline and I ask him, like, well, are you going to drive me to Utah? How am I going to get up there?
Right. Like I couldn't afford to sign up. How am I going to afford to go to this thing that I have to go to now because I need to do it to save my business?
Yes. He says, well, let me come up with a solution. I'll get back to you. So he comes back to me a couple of days later and he calls TCGI Jane in Thornton, asks if he's going up there. And she's like, yeah, I'm actually bringing some team members up there. this is what time we're leaving. And she says, if you want your new, downline to go, this is where you can drop him off. We'll meet him here. We'll pick him up and we'll take him to Utah. And so this is what he told me. And he says, now keep in mind, I'm not going to be able to go with you. But these people, they're good people. They'll take very good care of you. They'll drive you to Utah. They'll drive you back. So you're in good hands with them. I trust them. I know them. I trust them.
They're good cult members too. Like,
yeah.
So you just hop in a van full of cult members and go to Utah with them?
Yeah. And we drive.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets really weird. Okay.
As if it's not already weird.
Yeah.
Right.
So we meet up at the spot she tells us to meet up, which is at the intersection of 88th and Washington, I think maybe near a gas station in Thornton. And he drops me off there. There's a minivan that comes and they open the door. And I notice that the front, so they have like the driver's seat, the passenger seat, and then you have like the two back seats. Well, the back seat in the front part was taken out. You have the back seat in the very back that's still there, but the front seat was taken out. So you have people sitting on the floor, and then you have people sitting also in the back. And there is probably about maybe 6-7 people there.
It's like the Shaggin' Wagon in Dumb and Dumber, just like a bunch of people in the back.
Yep.
It's like sitting on the ground, sitting in the seats available, just piled in. How many people were in this van?
Six or seven people in the back, and then like the driver and the passenger in the front seat. Now the passenger is like always the navigator, just to kind of keep the person awake, tell them where to go. That was the person in the front seat's job.
Wow.
So yeah, and we went through Wyoming on I-80 to get to Utah because it's about an 8-hour drive if you drive through Wyoming during that time. And it was summer, so we didn't have to deal with weather issues.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. So I'm getting in this vehicle. And I'm feeling very uneasy.
Well, yeah, Russ, come on.
Yeah, but I'm doing
it. But you're looking around and you're like, I'm told this is normal. I'm told this is cool. It's probably just me.
So we're driving up to Utah. You know, we're kind of like sleeping in increments because you don't sleep well on the road in a vehicle in that.
There's no seats where you're rolling around on the floor.
Yeah. Oh, and also it gets even weirder. Because there's so many people and there's not enough room, we're using each other as pillows.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so there's
like a high school drama club, like in a massage circle, just all laying on each other.
So I don't know any of these people.
So culty, though.
And we're supposed to be snuggling, and I am extremely uncomfortable. I don't know what to do here.
Like, where do I sit? And they're like, just snuggle up with somebody.
Yeah.
And all of these people going to this business conference are like, this is totally normal business conference transportation protocol. Why are you questioning this?
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. My face hurts right now. Oh my God.
Oh, it's extremely weird.
I mean, you see it and you're like, this seems wrong. But you don't really say anything because everyone's like, this is just normal. And you're like, okay. All right. So you're driving through. You're now in Wyoming, you said?
We're now in Wyoming. So the first thing I try to do is I try to make best of the situation by getting to know the people that I'm riding with.
Right.
Well, team coordinator G.I. Jane, she snaps and says, you need to remember why we are going on this trip. This is a business trip. This isn't a social thing. So you need to talk to people about ACM, the opportunity, how it can bless your life. Everything is supposed to be about ACN and entrepreneurship, the business, and nothing else.
With the people that are already in ACN sitting next to you in a car for eight hours, you're not allowed to talk about anything other than recruiting tactics and business tactics and anything.
You know, it's always about the opportunity, because she was trying to get us in that mindset.
But you already joined the opportunity. So why do you need to continuously talk about it? Especially if it's not about recruiting at all.
No.
Especially since it's literally about a product. I mean, that's what, if you Google what's the difference between MLM and pyramid scheme, every single article says that it's MLM is about a product and pyramid scheme is about recruiting. But every interview I do, everybody says, yeah, I had to recruit and I couldn't, or I tried, or I felt guilty. Everybody talks about the recruiting mandate, which is one of the four cornerstones of a pyramid scheme.
Yeah. So keep in mind, because
which doesn't make any sense though, because you're sitting next to people that are already in the business, like, but you still have to talk to them about the opportunity. And was it like how to approach people about the opportunity? What's worked for you when approaching people about the opportunity? How to avoid problems? So that's literally you're just talking about the best ways to recruit people for 8 hours.
Well, and keep in mind, it's, you know, my being in that vehicle is also awkward for everyone else, because I'm another mouth that has to be fed now.
Right.
Okay. Which puts them at an inconvenience. And so not only was she rude, but her team members were also extremely rude.
That's what's so weird in this. I mean, again, it's very culty. All of these businesses are very culty. You're all each other's competition, but you're all teammates. And so there's always this sort of like underlying jealousy, aggression, and competition that's not present when you work at Target or, I don't know, Starbucks or any other business or corporation. Even a law firm isn't like that. Any business, it's not like that. The only industry where that is totally normal and acceptable and encouraged is multi-level marketing.
Yep. So, of course, because you're in the car for 8 hours, you're in very uncomfortable positions. People snap at you if you so much as breathe.
Right. Okay. People getting hungry.
Yeah. And I'm at this point, this drive to Utah feels like a kidnapping. And I was so miserable. I just wanted one of them to put me out of my misery by shooting me in the head and dumping my body on the side of the road. Because it's like, better.
You didn't even really want to go on this. You were told that you needed to go on this.
Yes.
And you said, I can't afford this. I don't have a way to get there. And so your upline found you a cult bus to take you there. And you don't know any of these people. And they're incredibly rude to you. And you're incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's like my mouth, when he's telling me the story, I know nobody sees me, but like, it's hanging open. Like, it's just like, what? I've never heard, like, this is like, you really were, when you said that your story is so different and I probably won't ever hear it again. I've literally never had a kidnapping story on here. So
it felt like a kidnapping.
Yeah. Like this kidnap feeling, like, where am I going and why am I in this handbasket?
Yes. Yeah. So the rest of the trip was like this, but once we get to Utah and towards Salt Lake, okay, the sun's coming up. At that point, we're all very grungy and grimy. We stink to high heaven. And the first question I ask is, where are we going to take a shower? Because we stink. She's like, we can't take a shower. There's no time. I said, we stink. We can't.
They had baby wipes in the back.
Oh, they had baby wipes.
Oh my God, I was joking, but it's real.
Oh no. They had baby wipes. So I ask, and TCGI Jane pulls out the baby wipes and she hands them to everybody. She's like, clean yourself up. You know, you got to make yourself look presentable. And
how professional and totally legitimate business practice.
Yes.
Lawyers totally do that when they're going to go into court. Like, they just hose off with a baby wipe really quick. I mean, it's totally normal. So don't even worry about that. That's normal. most people mention that. So that's not anything I've ever heard before. / sarcasm. Like, what?
Well, and you know, many of us, you know, we're still kind of like dressed in our normal clothes. So we had to find a place to change. Well, we couldn't just take out suitcases and go to the bathroom and change. No. We changed in the car.
So what is the percentage of people in the car? Like, I would be very uncomfortable getting undressed and dressed in a car full of people I didn't know.
Well, that's kind of why the women in the vehicle were wearing like sports bras that you see in workouts. They were wearing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they knew they were going to change in the van, and they like wore like undergarments that were not exposing.
Yeah,
if they exactly were to be exposed.
Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I just wore my bathing suit under this, so I'm fine.
Yeah, but in the meantime, you know, it's like the guys, you know, we're getting topless, we're putting on our button down collar shirts. I wasn't wearing a button down collar shirt. So I put on a polo shirt.
And then, so you're wearing business casual. Did you get in trouble for the polo shirt, or were you okay? Someone made a comment.
I was pretty much out of place wearing that polo shirt.
Mm-hmm. Everybody was in a business suit and tie, huh?
Yep.
Jackets.
Much. Yep.
Wow. Wow. That's another, when you show up to these things and you see everybody in business suits and ties and slacks and business, like the skirt and everything, and everybody looks so professional, it looks legitimate.
Yeah.
No scam would have all these people here in these very nice suits, dressed to the nines, smelling like baby wipes, if it wasn't real.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we're wiping ourselves down with baby wipes. We're changing into business clothes in the van. And keep in mind, like we're changing in the van in the parking lot. So, right. So people walking by are actually seeing us change.
I mean, I'm from San Diego, and I surfed in my youth, and I've changed many times while someone held up a towel at the beach, like getting out of wetsuits and things like that. I couldn't imagine, because everyone at the beach is doing the same thing, so no one's really looking. But I couldn't imagine being in a van in like a parking lot full of people walking by, changing with a bunch of strangers and wiping yourself down with baby wipes. Like, that is just the visual for me is just... It reminds me a little bit of, like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie, like Little Miss Sunshine, when they're taking the tour across the country in the van and everybody's in this van. Like, it's like, yep, that, but less family fun and more treacherous horror.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, so we go into the building.
Oh my God, and, this is incredible.
It's like a hotel. We go into like a ballroom. And we see a lot of people in there, you know, they're dressed very professionally. And I run into my Upline's ex-girlfriend. She's so happy to see me. She gives me a hug. And
you're like, a pretty girl is hugging me.
Yeah.
It's like this. I felt that way too. Like when the people up top would hug you and you're like, oh my God, they're so like put together and pretty and they make so much money. And I just want to be like them, or like have them like be my friend. Did you feel all that too? When you're at these events, like, I just want to be that person's friend.
I was just happy to be out of the car.
Okay. Fair enough.
So we go and we see, you know, the presentation, and one of the speakers is, he's like this very good looking guy. He's about 6'4", you know, square line jaw that you see in Hallmark movies.
Yeah.
I got a very, very beautiful wife.
Living the dream. He's proof of the dream. It works. You work it, Russ. It's proof.
Well, he's giving a very outgoing presentation. He's like very charismatic. He acts like he's your best friend, and then he's just like totally with you. You know, he tells some funny stories, makes people laugh, and sitting there, you think, wow, this guy seems to be pretty cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have intermission after a couple of speeches, And I see this guy, you know, he's just kind of, you know, by himself. And I make the biggest mistake in the world. I actually go up and start talking to him. You're not supposed to do that, by the way.
No, you're not.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
So he
you're going to get a talking to in the van on the way home.
Oh, I sure did. But that comes a little later. So.
Is it funny that I can call all of this stuff? Yeah. But it's so predictable. And it's just so like systemically and formulaically proven over and over that I can call it all before it happens. It's incredible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I go up and I want to talk to him. I want to meet him. And I say, hey man, that's a pretty good presentation. You know, I saw you in the video, and you gave a really great speech and that was awesome. Now he looks at me uncomfortably. He thinks, you know, because I'm like 5 foot eight, he's like 6'4". He looks at me like I'm a cockroach that just needs to be stepped on. And he shyly says, hi. And that kind of makes me raise an eyebrow thinking, okay, what's going on here?
Oh my God, I have a similar story. It's that attitude. I was at a thing the same, and I mentioned something to the person next to me. And I mispronounced a style. And this girl who was very high up turns around, whips her head around, looks at me, and she goes, it's pronounced. And then she did it the other way. And she goes, it's named after a family member. And then she whips around. And I was just like, that was unnecessary. Thanks for butting into my conversation and like being so pissy. And to this day, that person, I had no idea who it was at the time, but I remember now. And to that day, the person is still, I joke, is my arch nemesis in the company I was in. Because of how poorly I was treated by her before these people, they have this false sense of importance because they're the regional manager into the vice assistant president. And it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
False importance, false profits, false worship of people that literally just got into this scam first.
Yeah. Now, I'm in the process, you know, just trying to tell him. And of course, he just kind of cuts me off. And he's like, yeah, that's nice. Who's your upline?
Oh, and yes. Oh, my God.
I had no idea what an upline was. I had no idea what an upline was.
Because at this point, how long have you been in the business? Like a month?
No, more like a couple of weeks.
Okay. So you're a couple. You'd think they'd be nicer to the people that just joined, but they're like, we don't give a fuck. We already got your money.
Yeah. Okay. So he's like, yeah, that's nice. Who's your upline? I have no idea what an upline is. I said, what's an upline? And then he looks at me like I'm an idiot and says, ah, well, when you find out, tell me, all right?
What a douche.
He was a douche.
Oh my and God.
I was livid at that point. And I sit down.
What a disgusting experience. Like, it just keeps getting worse. Like, there's no redeeming anything of this trip for you yet.
No, none whatsoever. So I'm sitting down and we're going through the second half of the presentation, the speeches, and I'm pissed off. I just want to go. I want to go home. I don't
you just want to go. You still have an 8-hour van trip with a bunch of yokels.
Mm-hmm. So my upline's ex-girlfriend, she's like, so how was it? Did you enjoy yourself? I tell her exactly what she wants to hear.
Of course you did.
Okay.
That's great.
A lot of inspiring speeches. And it's wonderful to meet you. I hope we can get together soon. She's like, yeah, it's me. I'm so glad you came. But when I go over to the TCGI Jane, they're all pretty in a good mood. And they kind of see that I'm not in a good mood. And they're like, what the heck's wrong with you? And I told them about that experience, thinking maybe I'll get a little sympathy. No. TCGI Jane looks at me and says, you aren't supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to talk to the higher ups. Don't you know anything, you little peon?
And I say, well, what's wrong with it? He's like, he didn't have any bodyguards. What's wrong with talking to him? And she reminds me that only successful representatives are allowed to talk to him. There is a chain of command in this system that I work on a military base, and I should know that.
Oh, how toxic.
Yeah. And at that point, I'm thinking, I want to get out of here. This isn't worth it.
Oh. And you're like weeks into this business. You did stay a little bit longer after this.
Mm-hmm.
Not much longer, but a little bit longer.
Yeah. So.
But here's the thing that I experienced the same sort of like toxic, like, oh my God, this is so red flag, red flag, red flag, red flag. And then someone talks to you and you go, oh, okay. And you keep going. Someone convinces you. Oh, so like the same thing obviously happened to you because you stayed.
Yeah.
After this horrible experience, you talk TCGI Jane is telling you, how dare you talk to the successful people? You're not successful yet.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
At that point, there's like, all right.
I'm so sorry that happened to you. Oh my God.
Well,
it's unbelievable. Like, I can't even get past that right now.
I was very livid at that point.
I just feel like heartbreak and rage and anger.
Yeah. I was ready to go home and be done with it. It's like, all right, I'm ready to go when you are. When you're ready to go, I said, just, you know, I'll be out here waiting for you.
Be waiting in the van.
So, no, they eventually come out. We get into the car. The drive home was silent because we were all exhausted.
You're all snuggling up again or no? Are you guys still in your business suits or did you change back into your like car gear?
I think they were still in their business suits because everybody was tired. They didn't feel like changing. It was a long day. So we drive back and we don't get to Colorado until maybe midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, which my upline is waiting for me at the same spot that he dropped me off at. And of course,
at least that's nice that he's there.
Yeah. He's in a good mood and they drop me off. I am relieved to be out of the car. The moment I step out of that caravan there, I just felt like this huge sigh of relief.
So how long was the trip from the moment you stepped into the van of death and then got out? How many hours?
I'd say maybe between 8.5-9, depending on how many bathroom breaks that needed to happen.
No, I mean from like the moment you left for the conference to the moment you came back. Because it was like an 8-hour drive and the conference was however many and then another 8-hour drive.
I'd say the conference is probably about 2-3 hours.
So it was like almost a full 24 hours kind of thing.
Yes.
Almost like an entire full day. I mean, you got there super early in the morning and you got back at midnight.
Yep.
Wow.
And so I'm just, you know, I step out of the vehicle. I'm relieved. I don't want to ever see or talk to these people ever again. I want out of this business. I want nothing to do because I don't deserve to be treated that way.
Right. So of course not.
So my upline's in a good, happy mood thinking I'm motivated to go and grow my business. And so he says, what did you think? Did you have a good time?
Please tell me you were honest.
Wrong question. That was the wrong question to ask me. When he asked me that, I looked at him and there was just like this, there's like this fire in my eyes.
Right. Right.
I wanted to strangle that guy, honestly. And I'm not a violent person, but I was. Right. And
yeah, you know, I experienced like it's these really intense emotions. Because you are so emotionally manipulated and seesawed back and forth with love bombing and gaslighting and love bombing and gaslighting. And it is so emotionally draining. Like, it's all a tactic to keep you in longer. It's all a tactic to keep you stuck. You know, you tell somebody, it's a compliment sandwich, you know, like you're kind of ugly, but you're funny. And I, you know, it's like, you're like, okay. Thank you. So it's like these really like negatives with the positive, but there's a positive takeaway.
Yeah. Well, I looked at him and I said, what the hell did you think you were doing by throwing me to the wolves?
Oh my God.
And he's like, what are you talking about? And I just told him, I gave him a detailed explanation of exactly what happened. And at that point, he's feeling really awful. And
is this the first time he'd ever heard anybody speak up about these sort of issues?
This it is. And so
and how long had he been in when he was like, how long had he been in at this point?
He was probably in there for about a month before I even got in.
So okay.
So it's almost like a blind.
So you're both coming to this realization almost at the exact same time. Like, oh, this is toxic and bad. Okay.
Yeah. And this is the first time he's ever heard of any horror story like this. And I said, you threw me to the wolves. And I said, honestly, on that trip there, I wanted just one of them to put me out of my misery, shoot me in the head, dump my body on the side of the road. I did not want to be in that vehicle any longer. And the fact that I had to go up there and go back and deal with these people, I've had enough. I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
And he's like, hey, wait, calm down. Give it a few days. I'm like, no, there is no calming down. I am done. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right. He's like, I understand you're upset. Okay, I'd be upset in this situation too. Let me give my ex-girlfriend a call. Let me tell her what happened. Okay, we'll figure something out. I said, do what you got to do. Okay, I'm not really motivated to do this anymore based on the way I was treated. Right. Why do I want to be part of a business that treats people like this?
Right.
He says, all right, just give it a few days. I'm like, do what you got to do. So a few days go by, his ex-girlfriend calls me up and she says, I heard what happened. I am really sorry. There is no excuse for that behavior. If we'd have known.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
In it's every like if business.
Yeah.
Every
He's like, if we'd have known, we'd have probably booked you a flight. Had you fly up there, pick you up from the airport, not a problem. It says, I am extremely sorry. Listen.
Isn't that like, had I known, I would have done this really incredibly crazy over the top thing to make you feel better.
Yes.
Lie.
Yeah. Lie. So she's like, look, let me give you some, let me add a little sweetener here. Okay. And I said, I'm like, okay, what is it? She says, there's going to be a convention in September in Baltimore. Have you ever been to Baltimore? And I said, no, I have not. She's like, so we're going to have a convention there and Donald Trump is going to speak.
Mm.
And of course, this is 10 years before he even ran for president. So this is when he was doing The Apprentice.
The Apprentice, he's super famous reality star. He's, you know, millionaire, billionaire, everybody he thinks he's just the dude. He was just the dude in 2006.
And I liked watching The Apprentice because at the time I liked seeing, you know, people get into teams and competition. So
and it goes hand in hand with MLM too.
Yep.
And it really legitimizes it as well as like business. Like it's a business. It's a business. It's a business. It's a business. This is how business run. It's a business. It's not a business. It's not a business.
It's not a business. So she says, okay, Donald Trump's going to be in Baltimore. She's like, we'd love you to come. You're more than welcome to stay with me in my hotel. My brother is going to be coming with, as well as my mom. Now, the moment she said my brother and my mom are going to be there, I felt a little better.
I was going to say, you feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
But they could also be murderers and you wouldn't know. Like they could be a family of murderers and be like, stay with me in my murder house. Don't worry, my murder brother and murder mom will be there too. And you're like, oh, I feel so much better. Not that they're murderers. That's, you know, obviously, but this false sense of security by saying, oh, my brother-in-law and my mom.
Yeah. So
they already know how insecure you felt on the first trip. So they know, hey, this guy's sensitive and insecure. He doesn't like strangers. He doesn't like feeling uncomfortable. We need to really sweeten the pot because we can't lose this guy because he's generating income for us.
Yep.
Let's love bomb him a little and make him feel more comfortable. Say whatever we need to say. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
These promises don't have to have anything that comes to any fruition at all. You just have to get them there. You just need the warm body to agree.
Yep.
All right. Well, jeez, man, God, your story. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So she convinces me. So I book a flight to Baltimore. I pay $220 for a nonstop flight to Baltimore, which time was really good.
Is this a free trip? What did you have to pay for the convention ticket?
I had to pay for I had to pay the registration fee. I had to book the flight myself.
So how is she sweetening the pot? Just by telling you it's happening and she inviting you? Yeah. Is the invite the sweetener?
Yes, it's the invite.
So the invite not sweetener. Anyone can go. You have to be invited.
Yes.
But pretty much anyone can go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. So I booked the flight. I booked a nonstop flight, you know, paid $220, which is a very good deal at that time. I registered for the event. I pay my part of the hotel bill. At that point, yeah, I'm pretty stoked to go because I've never been to Baltimore, and seeing Donald Trump live, well, who doesn't want to do that, right? So
who doesn't want to be in the same room as like a super famous celebrity?
Yeah. Exactly. So, but in the meantime, between my booking the flight and the actual event, I continue to suffer. I am not very successful at this. And so it's like, well, what happens when your warm market list burns up? Well, let's try direct mail leads. We'll just stuff some envelopes, mail them to people that are interested in sales.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that didn't work because I didn't get any response from those people either.
So that's how you were trying to generate more recruitment for ACN was these mail leads. You were mailing random people letters?
I was basically mailing random people, you know, advertisements, which we printed off and from the ACN website, you know, we put envelopes.
It's like the junk mail you get in the mail. You're like, who the heck sent me this?
Yeah. And everybody that got that, I guarantee you, toss it in the trash.
100%. Okay. But here's another thing that you doing that very simple act and you making the effort and spending your own money, it adds into the sunk cost fallacy that you've added so much value and profitability on your end, that as long as you continue to work the business will work for you. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance where you're not really thinking about things and you're not really like objectively, really critically thinking it and looking at things.
Yeah.
And all you're doing is you're investing a little bit more time and energy so that you're more invested emotionally and monetarily invested. And even the point that her giving you this free invite to go to this conference that you had to pay for 3 months in advance, then ensures her, because you've already bought the plane ticket, you've already booked the hotel, you're already excited to go, you're already telling everybody you're going to get to see Donald Trump speak, and you're so excited about this whole thing, and you're going to meet all these people, and it's going to be great. Now you have to stay in the business for 3 more months.
And I have to stay in the business for 3 or more months, even though I'm not making a single dime. Right. I'm not getting any reps or customers.
Because you're so looking forward to this thing that you're spending more money on to go. So you're spending money every month to stay in so that you can go to the thing to spend more money.
Yep. And get this, right? So the time comes when my 30-day thing expires, a low-level regional vice president calls, and she sounds a lot like former Texas Governor Ann Richards, you know, the very, you know, the Southern accent, the whole sweet homey thing. And she's like,
bless your heart.
She's like, yeah, so I know you haven't really got any customer. It's showing here that you don't really have any reps or customers. What's going on with that? I was wondering if I can do something to help. I said, well, and I told her everything that happened. And she just labeled it as an excuse. And she's like, look here, mister, you have a few days to get here. And if you don't, you're not going to make a single dime. And then she hangs up. Well, at that point I am enraged. I call her back and I don't appreciate any of that she said to me. So I shout some obscenities. I say, you know, in the clean version, like, you honestly think you're a big shot? Look, you can't take any of that with you when you go. You're gonna go to the grave, the same place as anybody else. You don't call or talk to me or ever speak to me that way again. You understand? Click.
Yeah. That's again, it's like this toxic positivity and this like air of thinking that you're more important than somebody because of these artificial ranks that mean nothing. It is so toxic. And again, when you question it, you're given these very superficial answers like, well, that's how it is in corporate America too. You know, if you can't handle it here, you can't handle it there.
Yep. Yep, exactly. So I call my upline up. I tell them exactly what happens. And I say, look, I'm going to do this Baltimore trip, but after that, I'm done.
I'm going to go to this thing I'm going to. But once that thing is done, I'm probably also going to be done.
Yeah. And at that point, he's kind of tired of me because not only have I not made him any money, I haven't brought reps or customers or anything.
And all you're doing is you're just a big noise. You're just a big negative noise. You're just a hater. You're just a bitter hater who just won't stop asking questions.
So he says, what is the point of your going to Baltimore if you're not going to do this, if you're not going to be committed? Okay, you're just, you know, right now, he's like, I hate to say this, Russ, but you're dead weight to me. Okay, you're dead weight.
And you said that as I was drinking water, I almost spit everywhere. What?
Yeah.
Dead weight? How dare somebody say that to somebody? Like, you're dead weight to me.
Yeah.
How like emotionally manipulative and vile.
And I said, look, I've already made a commitment to go. I've already booked my flight. I've already paid my part of the hotel bill. I've already registered for this event. I'm going to get my money's worth while I'm there.
Yeah. If nothing else, it's a vacation away for a couple of days.
Exactly. So he
gets some crabs. Eat some crabs in Maryland.
Yeah. So he calms down. He apologizes and he says, all right, Russ, I'll tell you what. Okay. I know you tried hard. I know you weren't very successful. So here's what I'm going to do. While you're in Baltimore, I'm going to get some customers and I'm going to sign them up underneath you. So that way you have a base when you come back.
He's going to stack you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay. Well, thank you. I really.
Right. And you're like, oh my God, thank you. That's what I need.
Yeah.
That's what I can't do.
Exactly.
That's the basis of this whole entire business. And it's the thing I can't do. Thank you so much for doing that for me. I was stacked too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the time to go to Baltimore comes. I'm really excited. I fly into Baltimore, Washington International Airport. My upline's ex-girlfriend brother picks me up. We get in the shuttle. We go over to the Hunt Valley Inn. Over in Hunt Valley, which is like, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump away from Baltimore. And I get to meet, you know, the mom, you know, and I get to see the ex-girlfriend. And yeah, they were very hospitable. They were love bombing. They were nice. And so, yeah, I felt more comfortable there. But at the same time, it was awkward because I'm staying with people I'd never met once again.
like a student abroad, like in a hostel, like, can I stay on your couch, stranger? And they're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's kind of right. What it was.
Like couch surfing, MLM. Yes. MLM couch surfing is what it is.
Yeah. And so every day we're there, we have to buy light rail tickets to get on the light rail, head to Baltimore and go to the Baltimore Convention Center.
So that's another expense. What's a ticket for the day? $10 or so?
Something like that, yeah.
And how many days? 3 days?
3 days.
So that's $30. Which, you know, isn't that much, but when you're not making any money and it's a business expense, it puts you $30 more in the hole. You're supposed to be getting out of the hole, not digging yourself deeper into the hole.
Exactly. Right. And there's this fare inspector on that light rail train. And you can tell, by the way, he is looking for someone to bust. He wants to bust people. And if he can't do it because people are obeying the rules, he gets a little pissed off. So he gets on the train. He says, fare inspection.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Please don't forget to like and subscribe and share with all of your anti-MLM friends as well. See you next time.